Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the NFT Pioneers Podcast. Today I have a really special guest with me. It's Mark Gerban, and he's a real expert, and he knows his stuff when it comes to blockchain and Web3. It's really nice having you, Mark.
Thank you for having me, Abraham. Appreciate it.
I would say let's start with the questions. Mark, like, my first question for you would be, what is for you the metaverse, and do we really need the blockchain for the metaverse?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Metaverse in itself is kind of like, you know, just a bigger like push out for like our virtual reality space. I mean, it's kind of been like, it's just a different brand name for at least what Facebook, for example, kind of put out there. When I kind of think about, you know, at least that impression of changing it from just like a small little, you know, one-on-one conversation that you'd have with a person now to having like a full world, like immersive world. You know, I've worked in the online games industry for a long time, and it's kind of like you can just almost have like one segment to another, where it's just kind of like jumping worlds. So I see kind of like at least what's being done right now, unless it becomes like the major, let's say, virtual world property kind of thing. I see it just right now as just like another virtual reality space, and there's plenty of them. It's just a question of where people are going to focus and put most of their energy to. This one, for example, really has done that because they have a lot of money behind it so far. So at least that's good. And this is also where blockchain in itself may come into play, because now you're talking about different types of properties, like virtual properties per se, and how you can actually verify those assets and say, these are mine. So I think stuff like this really, really could be interesting, but it also has to have the right use cases. So I don't know if you've noticed that like a lot of people over the last few months have finally realized, or weeks at least, realized massive crash. At least, like, you know, so a lot of currencies and quote unquote ecosystems have failed, and that's because a lot of them didn't really solve anything. People are starting to realize, okay, you throw a blockchain on it, that doesn't just mean it does something. Very, very similar to the dot-com crash we had back in the day, you know? So it's kind of like, you sit there and you're like, okay, I go out, I put this thing out there, and people say, all right, this is now going to make something. And then, you know, when they realize, oh, this is just a big hype, you know, the real use cases will start coming out. So, you know, awesome technology, super useful, super applicable in a lot of good cases, but people have to look at those and focus on those, and rather than like only looking at the bad stuff, which is what drives me nuts sometimes. So.
Got it. What's something people seem to misunderstand about the Web3, in your opinion?
Yeah, and it's a very good point to bring up. There's a lot of people who don't understand what trust really means. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, you know, they kind of say, well, I've got, you know, this ID or this password or whatever, and this should be good enough. And I'm, you know, always thinking like, okay, people don't really have the understanding that there's more than this two-way exchange of information. It actually could be like a lot more decentralized, so that everyone can figure out who to trust rather than like a central entity. So I think that there's a big misalignment right now with the population for most people, because I think like people don't understand, like, you know, how complex, it's a very complex topic, right? And when the internet first came out, like years ago, people would be like, well, how do you explain what this actually is? And we're now in this like next definition of how to define something that people don't even know how to wrap their heads around. And I'm pretty certain that, like, you know, five, 10 years from now, we're going to be looking back and laughing and being like, okay, people couldn't figure this out. And now we're looking at, like, you know, exactly what this means. And it'll be much more simplified, mm-hmm. so that like the average person could understand. I think the biggest problem because of the misconceptions is because people don't have things where they can use it in like a real way yet. Like there's too much, it's not tangible for them to like kind of grasp, like, this is what it does. Mm-hmm. And it also, it's a question of also of accessibility and practical use. Once those key things come up, mm-hmm. and people start seeing, okay, this is how you can use it, then we're going to start seeing like much better use cases, much better scenarios, and then I think a lot less misunderstandings. Right.
Got it. Let's say someone in the audience, or like, let's say a big company is watching and they're like, hey, we want to enter this space, we want to enter Web3. Like, what would you recommend them? How should they do it? Or should they even do it? Or should they wait like for another 2 years till the market like establishes itself? Or would you recommend that they start executing projects now?
Well, that's a great question. And to be honest, like if someone is interested in the space already, they should already start at least just tinkering around. Like the first thing that most people never bother to do is to actually figure out how stuff works. It's not, for some people, they learn faster than others. So some people might be an overnight thing, not many, but there might be some. But for many people like myself, it takes a while and I'll figure it out and I'll look at it and start figuring out different ideas and different perspectives. And it's more or less like, you know, for the people who are just getting started, like you have to first get educated into like the really general basics, you know, like what does the whole system mean? Like, how does it establish trust? What does decentralized mean? What does a non-decentralized system mean? Like we're seeing that with currencies, for example, in different areas in China and Sweden and stuff like that. But like, so people have to understand what the core minimum basics are. I think after they start understanding that, then that's where I say, all right, start tinkering around. You know, it's coding in some sense. So it's technically free if you've got a computer, right? So just go ahead and start trying different stuff and experimenting. And you look for really the key things that are really going to make sense. Look at a lot of the market, take a look at what the market is doing, see what's not working, and try in some cases to find a pattern. If there's something that really doesn't fit the mold because it's really like it's not a good fit of the technology, or it's not a real use case, or think about it as like, okay, has the problem just not been approached correctly? So a lot of businesses, for example, you know, you talk about reinventing itself. We take a look at Netflix as a really great example, right? Like they started out first by having DVDs and like their little boxes that you would get at like supermarkets and stuff. And I remember looking at that going like, that's, you know, who's going to use this? And they stayed alive, but it wasn't until their major switch to the web where they started like, you know, getting massive traction after a few years. So, you know, they had to have massive investment, all that stuff, which is totally fine. But same thing in the end is that, you know, they took the risk, but they did a lot of things. So they took baby steps to learn how to get there and then realized, boom, okay, now we go for it. Same exact thing applies for these kind of people who are looking to do, you know, new things in the space and try to find some sort of niche like aspect of the product that you really like. So I'd use Metaverse as an example, where if there are certain like APIs that are open and available or certain other types of interfaces that you can work with, that you should already sandbox them and start using them and try them out.
Love it. Got it. How do you see the impact of blockchain technology on the payment industry?
That's like how does air work with people? It's like it's massive. It's like, you know, I'm trying to think of a really good correlation, but it's like such an essential thing that we've needed for such a long time, because the hardest thing that I think we've had is that how do you establish that something you have that's digital is actually unique? And this is basically the problem. Like the very first industry that's flat out disrupted right off the bat is the financial industry. There's no doubt about it. It's just that, like, you know, you're having a lot of pushbacks from banks at the beginning and a lot of other types of entities and stuff, because they don't see that there's much of a quote unquote danger. And then things start picking up slowly and they realize, oh wait, we better jump into this, but no, we'll hold back. And then when things start getting overtaken, they go, oh wait, you know, we got to start doing something about this. So it's a very similar trend that we've noticed always in banking and in finance and stuff. Payments in itself will be completely disrupted. You know, people talk about like a centralized or non-centralized kind of money per se. And when I take a look at the amount of time it takes to take a transaction for something that's of a high value, and you don't need to have, like, you know, banks in the middle of the whole system, it's amazing. Like if you take a look at the, if I transfer, let's say like $1 million, for example, I wish I had that much right now, right? then if you take that much and you send it by a bank, it takes a few days. It has to go through clearinghouses. It costs a lot of money. You'll lose money on exchanges from foreign exchange fees and all this other stuff. Whereas like in a blockchain scenario, let's use Bitcoin as a very easy example. Like you're dealing with a very, let's say that like depending on the network cost, but in the end, the exchange is so little, it's minimal to almost nothing. And you have this exchange of a full asset there. And that's amazing because like it takes us a few minutes where it takes literally a few days on the other scenarios because banks also have to cover, do they have enough within their reserves and all this other stuff. That's the best part about blockchain is that you all of a sudden have just destabilized an entire system that's been around for centuries, right? So now we're also seeing, I believe it was China. China had around 14 billion in transactions. Mm-hmm. I think it was, I'd like to say dollars or euros, but I don't know the exact currency, unfortunately, but they're basically the same right now, given how horrible currencies are doing. And China's done this. They've had around between 250 and 300 million users in China using the digital RMB. And that shows you that they've already been experimenting with this at a very large scale and a very successful scale. It is indeed a centralized system, so it's not decentralized, but it's enough where the government has gone and said, okay, not only does this give us like a good standalone digital solution, it also helps us give us more oversight. So the Chinese government from that point has seen the strength of blockchain, but they've also, they've taken away a little bit of advantage for the regular person, because it's supposed to be like a distributed decentralized system versus like something that's centralized, and they've kind of done that. And I think that there's going to be different variations of that. Like Sweden will also be trying some of this. And there's also a few other countries on the list. So when you start seeing this kind of momentum with such big players, the financial industry, especially payments, really has to be watching out. That's like for the traditional players like Visa, MasterCard, which is all, who are also investing in the space. So,
Do you see like in the future Bitcoin replacing fiat money in some countries?
It already does. Like they're already like, I'm trying to think which South American country was it?
El Salvador.
El Salvador. Thank you. I was thinking Argentina, but you're right. So this is what happens when I mix. But that's already a predefined question that you know the answer to. The answer is already here, like, and it's already been happening. And I see this as an extremely powerful tool to use for countries that have hyperinflation. Mm-hmm. So it really does help with them having a bit more stability from that point. And there's already countries that are starting to go in that direction. So in short, yes, can have a very big advantage for those kind of countries. Also think about like, the environmental impacts or the security impacts. Like from an environment point of view, everyone goes, well, crypto has like a horrible impact. It uses so much energy. And that's true for some in terms of like the maintenance of it and that kind of thing within the system, but they'll be reduced, like for Ether as an example. But when you take a look at the overall costs for banks, air conditioning, storage of cash, the transfer of cash, the security aspects where people are getting robbed or killed, all of these things are associated with cash and the financial system. And this is where I kind of go like, it's a bit of this attempt to always like show that there's something really bad behind all this when there's actually a really powerful, great thing that can come from this.
Mark, are cryptos really decentralized? Because like the reason is when you look at Bitcoin, for example, like it's always like the Bitcoins and the cryptos, they're always on those exchange platforms, and those exchange platforms are in a way like centralized. Like if they go down, my Bitcoin that is like on the server, on their server, it's gone. Would you say like Bitcoins or like cryptos are really this decentralized, or are those exchanges just ruining it?
Those exchanges are just easier business models for people to get into. But the whole concept itself just means that people are placing their money within a quote unquote deposit area, mm-hmm. which sort of in a way defeats a bit of the purpose of what, you know, a crypto asset's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a look at the user interface and the ability to trade for the average person, it's really hard because they don't know, like, oh, I have to do this. I have to save everything in cold storage, jump it out over here, QR. And that's tricky. And that's the problem actually that a lot of these exchanges actually solve. It's like the average person, you can take a look, for example, I think Coinbase has an awesome interface where they make it super easy to buy and sell. And that is, it is so intuitive and so easy to use that, like, you know, my kids could technically use it, mm-hmm. right? So I see the disadvantages is that, yeah, like when exchanges get hacked or something like this will occur, then that's obviously not good from a reputational point of view. Mm-hmm. But people forget that actually the whole purpose is not to have it on those kind of things. It's actually to have your own assets, store them, keep them as your own. And if you're doing trading for just making a quick buck, you know, I kind of think that that's also defeating a bit of the purpose. And that's the risk that people take when they go on those platforms. They could also do it via regular day trading via the other scenario as well, or just simply hodling, you know.
What do you think will contribute to a mass adaptation of the blockchain technology, be it like in the crypto world or be it in like in the NFT space?
Broad question. It's so broad. I'm trying to think about that. So for example, like if I would just take the China use case,
mm-hmm.
it's already a couple hundred million people. I think that in itself is already like stating that this is already what it takes because it's already doing it. I think a lot of people are just not aware that there are things like this out there that start picking up speed. Also that banks are within the exchange of crypto assets. I think that they're investing, they're trying to create funds. I think that's also destabilized or changed the market a bit because it actually jumps back to your previous question. But at the same time, these once they start getting accepted by financial institutions and governments, they're already there. And that's where I think things already have started happening. It's obviously going to take time before, for example, like the digital euro comes mm-hmm. out, the digital dollar, there's talks about this stuff and all different kinds of stable coins. And once they have, I think, more a bit of the stablecoin aspect, it's using blockchain technology. It's not decentralized. It's controlled by a government in the end, but at least at the same time, it provides a lot of the benefits of not needing to have physical cash anymore.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. How would you personally define a successful Web3 project?
Successful. I mean, obviously it needs to have traction. Mm-hmm. It needs to have a lot of users and then not just, I think it's good to have a good first core group of users,
mm-hmm.
like that are really hardcore into a product. But I think where you have a really successful product in the space is when you have the average person who knows nothing about blockchain, who's able to use it and engages with it. When you do that and you have a critical mass, that's where I'd say you have a measured amount of success. So for example, like the average person right now is at least starting to hear about the metaverse, and that's basically mm-hmm. because of marketing. Most people just think, oh, virtual reality world, this or that, and they have no idea about, like, you know, the allocation of real estate, if you will, mm-hmm. and like other types of things for people to kind of think about. And I think when people start seeing and interacting with this, that's where we're going to start seeing this change, and you're going to start seeing a bit more of, I think, a larger following where people are going to be more open to following more things, and it's become more mainstream. So, you know, success, because you're asking really about general success, that's what I think is what you need to get there. A lot of projects out there are still not horribly successful. I'll say if I take a look at, you know, anything that's coming in the pipeline, the biggest one on the radar for everyone's metaverse.
Mm-hmm.
NFTs, I have to admit that the use cases there, there's some decent stuff for like artists and for creators of content and stuff like that. I totally get it. But then there's also some extreme levels where it's been traded at such high amounts that actually decredits the industry a bit, you know? So it kind of makes it, oh, here's an NFT that's purchased for like, you know, a couple hundred million or a billion or whatever it was. I think the biggest one that we had, like, that not many people talked about was that. And that's where people go, okay, like, is that really a credible scenario? Are these assets completely overinflated? Is it money laundering? That actually takes away from what the industry is trying to build up, and that hurts. And we've got to kind of like fight that stigma. You know?
Is there an NFT project where you say, "Hey, that's really cool," or that really gives a value to the owner?
Oh, I mean, there's so many. I kind of was a bigger fan of OpenSea at the beginning, at least like with how they were doing everything with like artwork. I think looking at a lot of platforms, I think that for artists, who, you know, you have the term struggling artist, right? it's the first time I think that artists can get a bit more transparency to their own market and continue to benefit from it over their lifetime. That's something which admittedly I think is a really cool thing. And it also kind of exposes a bit of like, you know, you look at the music industry, how you have like people producing content there, and then they're, you know, they're being done on the streaming services. If I look, for example, like the music industry, you have the issue, and this is why I think NFTs are gonna, at least like more content within this direction is gonna be harder for like originality. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be harder to be more successful there because like you're going to have a lot of streaming services. People listen to their music. They're happy with it. Do you have, for example, like a limited edition, like, you know, Paul McCartney has only said this to like one person kind of thing, and you don't record it, you know, and you keep it locked away and that kind of thing, you know, then that can have a bit more of a tangibility and like a feel for it. But a lot of people say, okay, you know, if I have a graphic asset, it's the original, but then I take a photo of that, you know, it takes away from its value technically.
Yeah. My last question, Mark, just imagine you have a microphone in front of you and you are talking to the whole world. What would you say to the world, or what would your tip be for people getting into this space, into blockchains, into cryptos, into NFTs?
The whole world, are you sure?
Yeah.
Assuming everyone speaks my language, which, you know, it's tough to say. We don't all speak English, and that's for sure. I would say, you know, first thing is really learn. And go out there, read, learn, take a look, absorb everything you possibly can. There are so many amazing ideas out there. And eventually, like, the more you start reading and the more you start understanding how this all works, you start connecting the dots and you start seeing what really makes sense and what really doesn't make sense. Now, if you focus on things that interest you, good. If you're focusing on stuff where it's a great hobby, you want to go in that direction, good. If your intention is also not to make money, good. You know, you have you have what you're trying to fulfill, but you have to make sure always that your focus and what you're trying to accomplish is exactly what you want to accomplish, which, you know, might be that, you know, you want to create like an NFT platform for the purpose of, you know, reaching more people, or maybe to bring in more creative people just for getting them networked together, or all different kinds of purposes. Those purposes have to be defined. People have to be very clear about those. And the more transparent they are, I think, to the market, the better they actually build up this ecosystem in its entirety.
Got it. Guys, that's it for today's episode. Make sure to leave a subscribe, leave a follow. And it was really nice having you, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruben. Appreciate it.